Bran Strong. How will Lance's brand fare now that he's been stripped of his titles?
And while we wait for our Apple v. Samsung decision from Silicon Valley, a split decision from South Korea. Hey, everybody, I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. A little bit later in the show, we'll hear about a new intergalactic weather satellite and why we spent $700 million on two of them.
And we'll have part two of our look at presidential election forecasting models. Yesterday, we talked with the creator, let's say, of the Bread and Peace model, who predicted a strong Romney win. Today, a model called the 13 Keys to the White House. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, August 24th.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Here in California, a jury enters its third day of deliberations in the smartphone tablet copyright battle between Apple and Samsung. But today in South Korea, a court that was facing some of the very same questions issued its ruling.
The court ruled today that Apple infringed on two of Samsung's technology patents in a couple of its products, and Samsung violated one of Apple's patents in one of its products. For more, we're joined by Scott Tong in Washington. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, Scott, what happened in this ruling?
Well, kind of a split decision. Samsung went to court and it argued that Apple copied some of its wireless transfer technology. And the court said yes. So Apple has to take some of its older products off the market in Korea and then has to pay tens of thousands of dollars in fines. Flip the coin. Apple says Samsung copied some of its technology, its touchscreen patents. And the court also said yes, you know, Groundhog Day alert. Samsung now has to take some of its products off the market and pay money as well. On a big issue that a lot of people were watching, the court did not find that Samsung lifted Apple's entire design of the iPhone. We should keep in mind, though, that this applies to the Korea market, and there's a much bigger intergalactic space fight going on between these two companies.
Right, right. I understand that this patent case is playing out all over the world, and one of the cases in the U.S. as well, right?
That's the big one on the list. By one tally, there are 12 lawsuits in 9 countries.
Wow.
In San Jose, before a U.S. federal court, there is a jury that's deliberating now. Awfully complicated case, but Apple is asking for $2.5 billion, so it's a big one. In the closing arguments, the Apple lawyers said Samsung did intense copying of its technology, that you have to, quote, make your own instead of copy ours. Samsung came back and said, you know, we're going to play the monopolist card. Apple is trying to squeeze out legitimate competition through the courts. So this is a great big giant game of global mobile domination here.
Well, what about getting back to the U.S. case for just a second? Mm-hmm. What's at stake there? How important is that one?
Well, if Apple wins, a lot of people think this could shake up the industry because then competitors could look and say, you know, we have to go back to the design drawing board and steer clear of anything that looks like or smells like anything like the iPhone. So that's the big thing people are watching for.
Our own Scott Tong in Washington. Thank you, Scott.
Okay, you're welcome.
Clicking over for a quick look at how markets are starting the day, Stacey, looks like U.S. markets are off to a positive start so far. The S&P 500 up about 0.2%. Markets down, though, in Europe and Asia today. In Europe, of course, a lot of people shuttling back and forth across the continent trying to see if they can buy Greece a little more time to balance its books in exchange for the bailout. The Germans, not crazy about that, and they are saying so. Here in the U.S., durable goods orders jumped more than 4% in July. Durable goods are purchases of big-ticket items, computers, refrigerators, airplanes, and they're often interpreted as a way to track business spending.
Meanwhile, the big news of the day, Jeff, is, of course, that cycling legend Lance Armstrong has been stripped of all 7 of his Tour de France titles. Mm-hmm. That after he decided to end his longstanding fight against doping allegations. For more now, we're joined by sports marketing expert Nigel Curry. Good morning, Nigel.
Hello.
So, Nigel, Lance Armstrong hasn't admitted to any wrongdoing, but he has gotten stripped of his medals. How will this affect Lance Armstrong's personal brand?
Oh, I think it'll be extremely damaging. There's no doubt that any sort of accusations or innuendos that exist are damaging and worrying from the point of view of sponsors who basically don't like that sort of thing. If they can steer clear of it, they will.
Right. Well, Armstrong has some big sponsors, including Nike and Oakley. They're sticking by him so far. Do you expect that to continue? What has the history been with athletes in these situations and their sponsors?
Well, what tends to happen is nothing happens in the short term. It's the long term, really. And most sponsorship contracts tend to be fairly lengthy affairs. But I would suggest that long term sponsors will probably take a long, hard look at it and review it and probably be an opportunity for some sponsors to sort of take their leave, as it were.
Right. I mean, that is what happened with Tiger Woods. Some brands dumped him right away, but a lot of brands, like including Nike, did stick by him for a while.
Yeah. I mean, a lot. Some will stay with them. Some will take a longer term view and decide to exit. And that's exactly what happened with Tiger Woods. But over a period of time, a few of his longer-term sponsors decided that it was time to end the relationship.
And Nigel, what about the Tour de France itself? I mean, it has experienced a lot of problems with doping allegations. Lance Armstrong, definitely one of the most famous winners of that race. How will the Tour de France be affected?
Oh, I think it'll be very damaging for the Tour de France. You know, they've struggled over the last few years to have clear-cut winners and winners that haven't had some sort of allegations surrounding them or some sort of dispute over drug allegations. So, you know, it's very damaging for the sport of cycling in general and particularly damaging for the Tour, because Lance Armstrong was such a key part of the history of the Tour over the last sort of 20 years.
Nigel Currie is the Director of Sports Marketing at the sponsorship agency Brand Rapport. Nigel, thank you.
No problem.
Now, as Mr. Currie said there, Stacey, I mean, there's no real way to view this situation as good for Lance Armstrong, right? But it's interesting to me and worth noting that in doing this, he basically admits nothing.
Yeah.
And he does spare himself what would have been a very public airing of this evidence and maybe an outright loss. So to the extent that this was a business decision, I was kind of thinking about it that way, it might have been the smart one. And here, because it's Friday, every now and then on Friday I do this in a limerick, naturally, are my thoughts about Lance Armstrong's
business. I really like limericks. I'm very excited.
Decision. Here we go. Lance Armstrong's desire to bow out brings a big cost in medals and clout. But does he salvage the brand by not making a stand, but eternally leaving that doubt?
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
Today, the environmental group Greenpeace jumped aboard a Russian offshore oil rig in the Arctic Sea. They are protesting drilling by the Russian oil giant Gazprom. Greenpeace has pulled stunts like this for years, but lately the group has gone from occupying oil rigs and fishing boats to hijacking companies' identities online. Christopher Wirth has more.
Earlier this year, Greenpeace went after Shell with an online campaign that began with a hoax. The organization posted an online video of a fake launch party for Shell's Arctic drilling rigs.
Okay, so you put your glass right over here, Ian.
In it, a woman goes to fill a glass from a small model of an oil rig that pours drinks, but it breaks and soaks her with black liquid. Along with the video, Greenpeace launched a fake website where users could create satirical ads with furry Arctic animals. Shell's response? The company says it supports the right to protest, but it doesn't want people to be deceived. Hannah Perry is with the polling firm YouGov. She says online campaigns may have more impact than Greenpeace's traditional physical occupations.
I think the physical occupations have certain limitation in that they're very localized and they're easily forgotten.
Today, Greenpeace also launched a new online campaign against Volkswagen over auto emissions. I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
So, Jeff, how much would you pay to know what the weather was like in space?
20 cents?
It's probably not a question you hear every day.
What's it worth to me, right?
Well, NASA has just scrubbed the launch of two weather satellites that were scheduled to go up this morning that were supposed to measure not the weather down here, but actually the weather in these two donut-shaped radiation belts that surround our planet. And the cost was not insignificant, actually $686 million. Sally Herships has more on whether that was worth it.
How high up do you need to travel before you start worrying about weather conditions in outer space?
Oh, right here on Earth, because we are affected by it.
Ray Williamson works with the Secure World Foundation, a space research organization. He says bad weather events in outer space can disrupt everything from air travel to the GPS on your phone.
They're very hard to predict, and we don't have much lead time if we do see one coming.
Which can be a very expensive problem. When bad space weather interferes with satellites, planes can be grounded. That can cost $100,000 a flight. And if the satellite is damaged, it can take tens of millions of dollars to repair. Carol Patti teaches space physics at Georgia Tech. She says even though NASA's mission is pricey, it's well worth it.
The money is being spent in the U.S., so it's not money that's just being lost or literally thrown out into space.
In New York, on the ground, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
One way to predict who will win a presidential election is by following the polls. But polls can be fickle. Some academics prefer to cut straight to the data. Using economic and other factors, can you forecast who will win? Yesterday, we featured a model known as the Bread and Peace model that strongly projects Romney will win this election in November. Today, we have another model with a near spotless record. This time, it's from Alan Lichtman. He's a historian at American University. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jeff.
One very interesting thing about your model is that essentially it is only the incumbent party in the White House that matters. So you're saying that no matter what Mitt Romney does, it does not matter. How can that be?
That's correct, because the American electorate is above all pragmatic. And my model indicates, based on history and predictive success, that elections are basically referenda on how well the party in power in the White House has governed.
Your model turns on 13 keys, as you call them, to the situation of the party in the White House. Give us a sampling of some of your favorites, maybe.
Well, there are two economic keys, the long-term economy throughout the term and whether the economy is in recession in the election year. Then there are foreign policy successes and failures, scandal, social unrest, third-party campaigns, mm-hmm. whether the incumbent party candidate is the sitting president, and whether he's challenged within his own party.
So now to the drum roll. By your model, if Obama holds a majority of the keys, he wins the election. What do you have this time?
I have Obama holding 10 out of 13 keys. Therefore, Obama is a predicted winner. And this model has correctly predicted the popular vote outcome of every election retrospectively from 1860 to 1980, prospectively since.
In the case of Obama, what are a couple of those important keys that will give him the election as your model foresees it?
Obama wins both my foreign policy keys. There's been no huge foreign policy failure like losing the Vietnam War. And obviously, he had major successes in bringing down bin Laden and Gaddafi. He's taken out foreign policy from this election, and that is very significant, even if unrecognized by the pundits.
If he holds the foreign policy keys, he certainly must be lacking in the economic keys, right?
He splits the economic keys. Obviously, the long-term economy has been sluggish. So he loses that. But there is not an election year recession. So the economic keys are split. Based on the economy alone, you couldn't predict an Obama win, but it's not only the economy. Voters look at a wide variety of factors, even those like foreign policy that may not be mentioned in the campaign.
Alan Lichtman, distinguished professor of history at American University, may the best model and the best candidate, I guess, win. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And finally, Jeff, the next time you get your mail, you may need to lift with your legs.
Okay.
Apparently, the U.S. Postal Service is going to give junk mail giant Velasys Communications a big discount on the condition that the company agrees to send at least a million extra pieces of mail to you and me over the next year.
I hate this idea.
I know. Already my little mailbox is bursting every day with things that are not actually for me. The post office did get some complaints about this, and it said in a statement that it's just trying to solve its dire financial straits, as you know, Jeff, and is just trying to address that and make the mail, quote unquote, more valuable.
I find this very interesting because I always presumed that all of this junk mail, all of these flyers and advertisements and coupons that have to be inserted to the mail were a big pain in the rear for my mail carrier.
Yeah.
Apparently, they're what's keeping the whole ship afloat.
Yeah, apparently that's, I mean, there's big money in it, apparently, and which is why we're going to get a lot more of it. So,
in Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.